this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the May issue of Good Housekeeping Magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is an important one called Crash Proof Your Teen. There's a new way to prep your child to get behind the wheel. Here's the info every parent needs by Deborah Kent. Flashback. I'm remembering my daughter Lisa, age 5, zipping around our quiet cul-de-sac in her pink Barbie Jeep, blonde curls flying, and there I am, frantically running alongside her to make sure she doesn't get hurt. It's hard to believe that that memory is over a decade old. And likewise, it seems that only yesterday that I was scraping crushed Cheerios out of her car seat. Back then, I could guarantee she'd be safe in the car. After all, I buckled her in myself. Now she has her license, and soon she'll be leaving our little town and heading off to college hundreds of miles away, where I'll have little control over her driving or anything else. Of course I'm worried, and for good reason. Things really are different from teen drivers today. When I was a kid, the biggest distraction was the radio. In the 15 minutes I spent in Lisa's car this morning, her cell phone chimed continuously with calls, voicemails, and text messages, and Facebook status updates, all of which she ignored. But what happens when I'm not in the car with me? She has promised that she doesn't use her cell when driving, but I have yet to meet a single person who isn't at least tempted. And there's the minimalist approach to the driver's ed that's currently in place across America. My daughter learned to drive in an after-school program operated from a storefront in a strip mall. The class met 3 times a week for a month. In other words, the sum total of my daughter's formal driving education was 12 days, augmented by a few practice sessions in a parking lot with her dad and me. Like most of her friends, she got her license on the first try. To her credit, Lisa is a careful, focused driver, but I noticed that when she's at the wheel, she gets too close to the car ahead, leaving no cushion of time in case of a sudden stop. I've wanted to say something, but it would probably only ignite an argument. All my wise counsel seems to tick her off these days, and I don't want to undermine her confidence. Last winter, she was unharmed after sliding off an icy road, but so traumatized that she wouldn't get back in the driver's seat. As I drove home, she sat beside me, stunned. So I was thrilled when she had the opportunity to enroll in Driving Skills for Life, DSFL, a half-day intensive workshop for young drivers created by the Ford Motor Company Fund and the Governor's Highway Safety Association. For more on this program and similar ones, see Teen Driving Classes, a directory. She probably would have balked if I had asked her to take the class simply to improve her skills. She figured she's been through driver's ed, so she's a pro. But she agreed to do this seminar as a favor to me, and because she understood that this was a magazine assignment, not a commentary on her driving. Also because I promised her we'd stop at IKEA on the way home. Neither of us really knew what to expect. Lisa figured it would be a rehash of her driver's ed, while I pictured some kind of simulation like Back to the Future that we rode at Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida. I also wondered whether they employed any scare tactics I experienced in high school, ranting lectures and somewhat gruesome movies featuring crash scenes, all meant to make us cautious drivers. Either way, we both figured it would be a passive experience with teachers at the podium. Lisa's only concern was whether she would be bored. Turns out, boredom was not even remotely possible at this workshop because, among other reasons, Ford employs professional race car drivers to lead the program. These charismatic, awesomely attractive, real-life speed racers are flown in from all over the country to teach the kids. I watched my daughter's expression as the drivers introduced themselves, and I knew she was sold. The students of all high school age were broken up into groups of 3 and assigned to a Mustang and one of the drivers. After a brief orientation, they hit the asphalt. This particular DSFL class was in the parking lot outside of the U.S. Cellular Field in downtown Chicago. The training had three key themes: vehicle handling, hazard recognition, space and speed management. In one exercise, students weave around a tightly coned course of turns and slaloms, first with no distractions, then a second time while talking on their cell phone, taking a drink of water, or sending a text message, or changing a CD. The point: even minor distractions make it hard to handle routine driving challenges. As Lisa emerged, she looked at me somewhat sheepishly. She told me she was never realized just what a dangerous habit some of her friends had, answering their cell phones while driving. I can only hope she meant her friends and not her. On another course, the kids are asked to drive down a single lane at about 35 miles per hour. The lane splits into three, each with a green light at the end. Suddenly, two of the lights turn red, at which point drivers must shift into the lane with the green light. I saw Lisa's car come to a squealing stop as she hit her brakes as hard as possible, an exercise meant to familiarize students with a car's anti-lock braking system. It proves that hitting the brakes hard won't damage the car, a fact that surprised my own kid. I always figured I'd pretty much break my car if I slammed on brakes. Now I know that cars are actually designed to stop quickly, Lisa said. Then the students repeat the course, now at 40 miles per hour, to show how even a measly 5-mile-an-hour increase can take and make a huge difference in a driver's ability to brake. Given my daughter's tailgating tendency, I was keen on seeing her learn this particular lesson. I'm thankful she now understands why she shouldn't tailgate. As I stood at the sidelines, I could feel my heart practically stop as I watched Lisa in another exercise, speeding down the length of the parking lot and then forcing her skid car, specifically jacked up and rigged, to cast a spin. The point of this exercise was to teach her how to control a skidding car. While I watch my daughter's Mustang speed, lurch, and twirl, I remind myself that A, she was supposed to be doing this, and B, she was sitting right beside a professional driver. Said Lisa after this exercise, it was so surprising to see that I really am the master of the car. I can get it under control even when it's skidding. Last of all, Lisa donned a pair of Fatal Vision goggles with a special lens that stimulates the kind of spatial distortion you would experience after a couple of beers. Once I put on the goggles, I couldn't tell if things were close or far away, she told me. That was totally freaky. Drinking and driving isn't something I plan on doing in real life. I'm not an idiot, Mom. By the time the workshop was over, my girl, who was so convinced that she had nothing new to learn about driving, admitted, "I think the reason I haven't had an accident isn't that I'm such a great driver. I've just been lucky," she said. She credited the class with improving her skills and helping her realize just what a serious undertaking driving was. To me, the Ford workshop seemed like one of the few and final maternal things I could do to keep Lisa safe as she headed off to college. Despite my secret impulse to swaddle my daughter in bubble wrap, I realized that the most important thing I can do now is to help her hone the skills she needs to be free and to stay safe. Will I ever be totally relaxed about her driving? Probably not, because that is me, a mom. I'm always going to worry about my baby, whether she's driving a Barbie Jeep or a basic model Civic. So, here are some teen driving classes that you can find out about. The Ford class mentioned in this article is called Ford Driving Skills for Life. That is spelled DRIVINGSKILLSFORLIFE.com. This free course is offered in about 10 U.S. cities per year. After an hour or two of classroom time on Safe Driving Basic, this workshop has 4 hours of in-car training, complete with a slalom course and braking on slippery surfaces. A free online tutorial with interactive driving simulation and quizzes is also available. Toyota also offers one, toyotadrivingexpectations.com. Since 2004, this free 4-hour program has been offered in 19 cities that have been identified as high teen accident rates. Students spend half the time in the classroom learning rules of the road. On the other half, they apply the knowledge, maneuvering a car around tight turns and wet roads. Parents are encouraged to attend this class with their kids. Driver's Edge, driversedge.org. Indie stars like Mario Andretti have lectured at this free half-day class to be held in 20 cities in 2010. Half the time is spent in the classroom. Then students get behind the wheel to learn other skills and to deal with panic situations. Another class, Tire Rack Street Survival, is found at streetsurvival.org. To be held in 60 locations this year, this class costs $75 and uses the student's own car. This class is sponsored by Tire Rack, the BMW Car of America Club, and the Sports Club of America. But all the cars, or any type of cars, are welcome. Students learn how to adjust mirrors, minimize blind spots, and then they head out to practice navigation skills in a skidding situation. Allstate offers a class, Allstate's Distracted Driving Family Challenge. In 2010, 40 cities will have hosted this free 4-hour course, which starts off with 20 minutes of classroom time, emphasizing how distractions can impair driving performance. Then students drive a slalom course while texting, listening to music, or talking to passengers so they can see just how handicapped they really are under those situations. There are 4 key risks for teenage drivers. It's the statistic every parent hates to hear. Motor vehicle crashes are the leading killer of teens in the United States, causing 1 in 3 deaths. Here's how to protect your child. The first risk, night driving. For 16-year-olds, the odds of a fatal collision triple between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m., reports a study by the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety. Part of this is due to poor visibility. Plus, driving drowsy quadruples the crash risk. This is also when alcohol is most likely to enter the mix. 1/3 of all fatally injured drivers are alcohol impaired. Reduce this risk by establishing a curfew of 9 p.m. and reiterate the dangers of drinking and driving. The next risk, distractions. Nearly 80% of crashes and 65% of near crashes involve driver inattention within 3 seconds of the accident. Dialing a cell phone, for instance, triples the risk of a crash. While distractions are dangerous for drivers of all ages, teens are especially vulnerable, since according to MRI scans, the parts of the brain responsible for multitasking do not fully develop until age 25. Reduce the risk. Insist that teens turn off cell phones and select a CD before the car starts moving, and that they abstain from any activity such as eating, driving, or makeup application that takes their wheels or their mind off the road. The third risk, passengers. For 16 and 17-year-olds, carrying just one passenger increases their risk of dying in a crash by almost 50%. Having 3 or more riders triples the risk as compared with driving alone. Reduce it. Don't allow your children to chauffeur pals or specify a 1-passenger limit, including siblings. The last risk, lack of road experience. The most dangerous time for teens is the first 1,500 solo miles. That's just how long it takes for kids to learn to handle the roads. The leading cause of teen accidents is plain old driver error, such as overcorrecting or turning or failing to yield. Reduce this risk. Install limits during those first 1,500 miles. Have your child follow your state's graduated license plan, which impose driving curfews and passenger restrictions for a period of time, and insist that she buckle up. 56% of teens killed in crashes weren't wearing their seatbelt. New no-talk technology. Want to make sure your teen doesn't use her cell phone while driving? Consider the new EyesUp, I-Z-U-P, application. $4.95 per month at GetItZip, that'd be GetItZip.com. It stops outgoing and incoming calls and texts, except for an emergency contact program that contacts you, when your kid's phone is in a car going above a speed you select, and can be deactivated if your child is a passenger. Good housekeeping testers gave this device a thumbs up. Yes, you can stick to a budget. This article is by Kelly Grant. Perhaps this sounds familiar. You go to the ATM, withdraw a bit of cash, and a day or two later wonder, have I been robbed? Did I lose that money? Only to realize that you frittered it away. The truth is, when you don't track your money, it's too easy to overspend. Studies prove that dieters who keep a food diary are more successful at reaching their goals, and savers who dutifully note each purchase see the same effect, says Joshua Klappel at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. In either case, self-monitoring means you're more likely to do the right thing, eat better, or spend less. That's where a good money management system comes into play. Using software, a website, or even good old-fashioned pay-it-in-cash plan can nudge you to focus on your finances and keep much of your hard-earned money. Here are some of the best options. Financial software. Install Quicken, available at office supply stores for $30 to $60, and it can pull data from your financial accounts online, send you bill-paying reminders, and classify purchases into budget categories. You can also track your cash transactions. They're good for seeing where your money goes and analyzing ways to cut back. A case study, before Erin Caffrey and her husband started using Quicken this spring, takeout was on the menu more than once a week. But when the Pittsburgh couple installed software and looked at their expenses in the pie chart, they saw that their burritos to go habit was a hefty slice of their food budget. Now I see what a few nights of takeout means, says Caffrey. I don't resent my husband's, do we really want to order that question? Like I used to. But there are free websites. Sites like Mint.com and MoneyRight.com are the free web equivalent of financial software. You can easily set budget goals, from buying a house to saving for retirement. Graphs and alerts help you monitor your monthly progress, says Ava Carnani, creator of this software that powers MoneyRight.com. While the sites don't display account numbers, it's still important to make sure your antivirus and spyware protection is up to date so it protects your vital information. These free websites are good for people who need real-time help charting where their money is going and where they've overspent. Through these websites, if your checking account's balance drops below, say, $25, you'll receive a text message or email that you're close to overdrawing, helping you to avoid those pricey $30 or more returned check fees. Or you may need to use the accordion folder. Stash several months' worth of bills and receipts in an accordion folder with sections, say for clothing, electricity, phone, and so forth. With a history of bills at your fingertips, it's easy to see when reoccurring expenses are out of hand. This is good for those who like working with printed items versus online bills, and who don't have a clue whether their expenses are trending up or down in a given category. Watching your monthly cell bill rise with the tweens' text messaging, for example, can help you decide when to add Verizon's wireless $10 messaging plan instead of paying $20 for 100 texts. Use a ledger pad to make the system more organized. Or you may want to use the envelope system. This is as basic and effective as budgeting systems get. Look at your income and set your expenses, like your mortgage and utilities. Then figure out how much you can afford to spend on things like gas and entertainment, and put that cash for each category in its own envelope. Spend as you go, but remember, when you run out, you run out. This method is good for anyone who needs a back-to-basic approach to spending. If you shop with cash, you think about what you need. With a credit card, you say, what do I want, not what can I afford. Wisdom to Go, When Time is Short, What Really Matters, by Janine Roth. A friend of mine who's a surgeon was recently diagnosed with breast cancer. She told me that when she heard the news, she had two distinct reactions. The first was shock and fear for her life. The second one was, wow, now I can stay home for a few months. Surprised, I asked her about the second response. I'm so tired, she said. I work all day taking care of other people. Having cancer, as drastic as it is, gives me an excuse to take care of myself. I've been wanting to redecorate my house for years, wanting to wake up in the morning and putter around the yard. I've been wanting to write a book, but I never had the time. It's not that I'm not worried and afraid now, but I'm also strangely relieved at being able to focus on myself. Should it really take a wake-up call this dire to get us to reorder our lives? Unfortunately, sometimes that is what's required. It's hard to give ourselves what we need. We spend so much time and energy trying to balance work and family that we forget to factor ourselves in. Just a few more weeks, we think, and my schedule will clear up. Then I'll slow down and catch up on all my personal things. My friend doesn't, of course, believe that being tired and wanting to putter caused her cancer, but she does believe that among other repercussions, the diagnosis frees her to do what she's wanted to do for a long time. Besides, everything else cancer is, she told me, it's an opportunity to re-examine your priorities. After talking to my friend, I decided not to wait for a terrifying diagnosis to start thinking about my own life. What was I postponing until a future time when I would be successful enough, old enough, or, God forbid, sick enough to do what I wanted to do? I remembered an exercise I used to suggest in my workshops. I'd ask the participants to make a list of things they would do if they were told they would only have a year to live. Then I'd ask them to write down what they'd do if they'd only have 6 months to live. After that, it was a month, a week, and finally a day. With a year to live, they would say things like, I travel to Istanbul, live in France, stop working, learn to weave, eat as much ice cream as I wanted, eat all the potato chips, spend as much time with my children, binge on sweets, stop going to the gym. With 6 months to live, they'd say things like, I'd go on a major shopping spree and buy everything I wanted. I'd travel constantly. I'd never travel again. I'd eat dessert after every meal, especially after breakfast. I'd stop doing anything I didn't want to do. I'd learn to sing. I'd eat whatever I'd want. I'd have a show of my paintings. I'd spend all my time with people I love. I'd spend my time alone, learn to meditate, learn to tango, learn not to worry. But as they imagined they had less and less time to live, the answers became more poignant. I'd hold my children close. I'd tell my husband how lucky I feel to be with him. I'd smell the air. I'd crunch in the leaves. I'd watch the birds. I'd spend every waking moment I could being grateful for being able to see, breathe, smell, and touch. Binging is never part of this list. Being. No one wants to miss a moment of being or of being alive or not feeling good from overeating. When you imagine that you have a month or week to live, you suddenly become aware of what's really important. The entire cheesecake you wanted to eat, you had to eat, suddenly becomes obsolete. You realize that when you eat compulsively, you feel drained and tired, unable to pay attention to the things you love about being alive, the things you might not notice as you run through your errand list. The size of your thighs no longer seems so crucial. Some of the things that feel important when you think you have all the time in the world seem inconsequential when each moment is precious. Our lives turn on a dime. One minute, everyone is fine. The next minute, a doctor delivers bad news or there's an accident. And even a long, healthy life goes by too quickly. Time flies. It gallops. Would you think, eat my way through the menu at the Cheesecake Factory? And would you take that off your to-do list if you only had a short time to live? Then it shouldn't be on your list now. On the last day of my life, I would want to plant a tree, the poet W.S. Merwin says. As for me, I would want to love extravagantly. And though I wouldn't binge, I would definitely eat a piece of 77% bittersweet chocolate sprinkled with sea salt. Ask yourself, what you'd do if you didn't have endless time to live? Ask yourself what you're not doing now that you would do on the last day of your life. Especially ask yourself where food fits into all this. Does it make you feel more alive? Does it deaden you? Is it a consolation prize? Take the time you have now to look at your priorities through new eyes before reality forces to you. Imagine yourself in the last year, 6 months, month, and a day. Would food be your chief delight or simply a pleasant way to nourish your body and give you energy to do the things you really want to do? Listen to your longings. Ask yourself, what am I waiting for? And when you realize the answer, nothing. So dive in. The Ask Peggy column. Here's Peggy's first question. The kids next door constantly cut across our yard, leaving tracks and trampling plants. How can I get them to stop without being the fun police? Here's Peggy Post's answer. In a friendly tone, speak with the parents. We know kids are kids, but we need your help. Could you please ask Sam and Susie to take a route other than across our lawn? If necessary, follow up with your kid, the kids. Your parents and I have talked, and we really want you to stop cutting through our yard. You can see the crushed flowers. Please use the sidewalk instead. Thank you. Here's Peggy's second question. Do you hush a green fly? Your super eco friend always nags you to buy organic, and you're getting annoyed. Should you ask her to can her campaign? Here's Peggy's answer. Sure. Tell her you're glad that she's so enthusiastically eco-conscious and healthy, but her campaign to convert you is getting tiresome. Don't get angry with her. Instead, put the one on yourself. Tell her that you're stubborn and you'll be happy to rethink this green movement, but at your own pace. Here's a good housekeeping tip for cleaning the kitchen sink. Biggest challenge, stains and who knows what else in the kitchen sink. Get rid of the gunk. Just about everything that happens in the kitchen, cooking, cleanup, projects, can stain it easily. Splotches show up on light porcelain or solid resin surfaces, though even stainless steel is susceptible. The speediest way to remove marks from these surfaces is use an eraser-type sponge like Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. Then rinse. To sanitize after cleaning, plug the drain and fill the sink with a gallon of warm water. Swish in a tablet of bleach. Dip in a sponge and wipe down the faucet and all the handles. Let it sit for 5 minutes, rinse, and air dry. And also, use Armor Hammer baking soda. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode from Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.